ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्याज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीदेवे नमः. Translation: although the Queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances. Do you all know what furtive means? You probably don't know what furtive means. Furtive means the kind of glances that queens make, or females make. It means hidden, or just quick. Not very apparent, to trying to hide it like that. What does it say in the dictionary? You have a dictionary in there, presumably? And have an English class along with a Bhagavatam class.
Taken down, used surreptitiously.
Surreptitiously. That's by stealth, secret.
Sly shipwreck. Clandestine.
Alright, clandestine, surreptitiously. These are words. Which you also may need a definition for. Not showing it. Although the Queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances, that means the glance is just between the Queen's and Krishna, it's not really meant for anyone else to notice, were all spotless and exciting. Spotless in this sense means, how can a glance have spots on it? It sounds like something out of a metaphysical poem. Because a glance is not something measurable grossly, whereas a spot is. But it means his spotless means without material contamination. It means without any mundane lust in this context. It means this. So the beautiful smiles and the furtive glances of the queens were spotless and exciting, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even the tolerant Shiva could fall victim to them, still, despite all their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord. I'm going to translate for the ladies there. It's pretty difficult to translate. That's all one sentence. That text purport. The path of salvation, or the path going back to Godhead, always forbids the association of women. And the complete Sanatan Dharma or Varnashram Dharma scheme forbids or restricts association with women. How then can one be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is addicted to more than 16,000 wives? This question may be relevantly raised by inquisitive persons really anxious to know about the transcendental nature of the Supreme Law. And to answer such questions, the sages at Naimisharanya have discussed the transcendental character of the Lord in this and in following verses. It is clear herein that the feminine attractive features which can conquer Cupid or even the supermost tolerant Lord Shiva could not conquer the senses of the Lord. Cupid's business is to invoke mundane lust. The whole universe is moving, being agitated by Cupid's arrows. The activities of the world are being carried on by the central attraction of male and female. A male is searching after a mate to his liking, and the female is looking after a suitable male. That is the way of material stimulus. And as soon as a male is combined with a female, the material bondage of the living being is at once tightly interlocked by sex relation. And as a result of this, both the male's and female's attraction for sweet home, motherland, bodily offspring, society and friendship, and accumulation of wealth becomes the illusory field of activities, and thus a false but infatigable attraction for the temporary material existence which is full of miseries is manifest. Indefatigable. Do you all know what that means? Indefatigable. It means doesn't get tired. Literally it means. Maya doesn't get tired. She makes us feel tired, especially during class. So the attraction for material, for temporary material existence, indefatigable. It keeps on going. Don't think that when I grow up, just by getting older, I'll be free from lust. I can satisfy personally. It hasn't happened to me yet. So, up to the last moment of death and beyond, it continues, unless we become Krishna conscious. Please all move a little closer, because there may be more devotees coming. Plus, those who are therefore on the path of salvation for going back home, back to Godhead, are especially advised by all scriptural instruction to become free from such paraphernalia of material attraction. And that is possible only by the association of the devotees of the Lord, who are called the Mahatmas. Cupid throws his arrow upon the living beings to make them mad after the opposite sex, whether the party is actually beautiful or not. Cupid's provocations are going on even among beastly societies who are all ugly looking in the estimation of the civilized nations. Thus Cupid's influence is exerted even amongst the ugliest forms, and what to speak of the most perfect beauties. Lord Shiva, who is considered to be most tolerant, was also struck by Cupid's arrow, because he also became mad after the Mohini incarnation of the Lord and acknowledged himself to be defeated. Cupid, however, was himself captivated by the grave and exciting dealings of the goddesses of fortune, and he voluntarily gave up his bow and arrow in a spirit of frustration. Such was the beauty and attraction of the queens of Lord Krishna, yet they could not disturb the transcendental senses of the Lord. This is because the Lord is all perfect Atmarama, or self-sufficient. He does not require anyone's extraneous help for his personal satisfaction. Therefore, the queens could not satisfy the Lord by their feminine attractiveness, but they satisfied him by their sincere affection and service. Only by unalloyed transcendental loving service could they satisfy the Lord, and the Lord was pleased to treat them as wives in reciprocation. Thus, being satisfied by their unalloyed service only, the Lord reciprocated the service just like a devout husband. Otherwise, he had no business becoming the husband of so many wives. He is the husband of everyone, but to one who accepts him as such, he reciprocates. This unalloyed affection for the Lord is never to be compared to mundane lust. It is purely transcendental, and the grave dealings which the queens displayed in natural feminine ways were also transcendental, because the feelings were expressed out of transcendental ecstasy. It is already explained in the previous verse that the Lord appeared like a mundane husband, but factually his relation with his wives was transcendental, pure and unconditioned by the modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada begins this purport by stating that the path of salvation, or the path going back to Godhead, always forbids the association of women. So, the ladies at the back there, either you have to leave or we have to leave. Is that right? Well, it's being taken as a joke. And it is a joke, because neither are we going to throw you out, nor are we going to leave here, nor are we going to fight with you, and nor are we going to associate with you, because it says here that association with women is forbidden, but we're not going to associate with you in a mundane way, but in a spiritual way, by discussing the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The question is here, How can one be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is addicted to more than 16,000 wives? Well, one answer is that one should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he has more than 16,000 wives, because no one else can have 16,000 wives in the way that Krishna had them. He was personally associating with each one of them. You could keep 16,000 wives as a kind of formality, but not you or me, but theoretically, in most societies around the world, polygamy was accepted. It's mostly coming out in a Christian idea that polygamy is not accepted. So theoretically, a king, you'd have to be pretty rich to maintain them all, but you probably, it'd be unlikely that anyone who had 16,000 wives would remember the names even of all of them, what to speak of knowing them. Just like a guru who has many disciples may not remember the names of all his disciples. And we think that's something terrible, but actually Srila Prabhupada himself didn't personally know the names of all his disciples just by looking at them. I happen to know that because Prabhu Vishnu Swami told me that twice after he was initiated, in his presence, Srila Prabhupada asked other of his disciples, what's his name? Even though he was initiated devotee. So don't worry too much if it happens that your guru doesn't remember your name. But Krishna not only remembers the names of his 16,108 wives, but he personally lives with each one of them. And that's only possible for Krishna. And therefore, that's one very small evidence for his being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are so many evidences. And actually, everyone is his wife. Every living being is intimately connected with him as his servant. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arshabhritta. Everyone is his servant. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada, in some detail, explains the nature of material entanglement based on sex attraction. And he compares that with Krishna's situation. The question Srila Prabhupada asks here, he raises the question in the purport, how can one be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is addicted to more than 16,000 wives? And Srila Prabhupada amplifies the point, which is actually the point being made in the verse. The whole purport is an explication. Do you know what that word means? Probably don't know what that means. It means a detailed explanation of the verse in which it is stated that everyone is bewildered by sexual desires, even up to Lord Shiva, who is known as Dhira. Srila Prabhupada gave him as the example of Dhira, Kalidas. Prabhupada quoted Kalidas as giving the example of Lord Shiva as Dhira, because he was Parvati, attempted to agitate Lord Shiva, and he remained unagitated. But that same Lord Shiva could become agitated, theoretically it's stated here, by the beautiful queens of Krishna. They're so beautiful. By their beautiful smiles and furtive glances. So if even Lord Shiva could be victimized by the attraction of the queens, then what to speak of everyone else? And the whole material world is going on by this sexual attraction. But Krishna, this is the point that is given in the verse, and Srila Prabhupada has explained in the purport, Krishna was not addicted to his 16,000 wives. He was transcendental to mundane lust. And thus, the queens could not agitate his mind in a mundane way. Now, this description seems to contradict that of many statements which we find in what can be called the higher or more intimate or esoteric writings, especially of the Gaudiya Acharyas. The Gaudiya Acharyas have revealed to the world, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to the world, Radha Mahima Prema Rasa Shima Jagate Janata Ke, who but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could have revealed the glories of Radharani, which are the ultimate limit of prema, or love of Krishna. So we have descriptions of the Gaudiya Acharyas of how Krishna is bewildered or controlled by the love of the Vrajvasis, and especially by Radharani, who is Krishna is known. Here we have in this verse the word Madan. He who maddens the world. And Madan Mohan is Krishna. He bewilders even Madan, Cupid. And Radharani is described as Madan Mohan Mohini. She bewilders, he who bewilders everyone else. So these are very high topics, which are probably discussed more in this part of the world, which actually are not really part of the world at all. But if we are to examine or consider Vrajamandal from a worldly perspective, we'll find that these very high topics are discussed more in this area than anywhere else in the universe, most likely. We'll hear. You just have to take a little walk down the road and you'll probably find some katha going on Vilap Kusumanjali, or the extremely highest topics of discussion. And in that we'll find how it appears to contradict what's stated here, that Krishna is not bewildered by his queens. Well, maybe he's bewildered, yes, he's bewildered more by his gopis in Vrindavan. That we have heard from our acharyas. He is more attracted by the love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan than by those of Dwarka. Some Gauriyas, they therefore don't even like to discuss about Dwarka or Mathura. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He also discussed about Dwarka and Mathura. We find in his teachings to Sanatan Goswami, he discussed these points and told Sanatan to reveal this. This is what he told Sanatan to reveal to the world. So it's better not to try to be a greater Gaudiya Vaishnava than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not a very good policy. Or, for that matter, a greater Acharya than Prabhupada, and think that, what the hell am I doing in this school here? Why don't I just take a hike over to Radhakund and get into the real thing? What are we discussing? All this sex attraction? Yeah, I know all about that. You know, that's kid stuff. Well, we're all foolish children in the kindergarten of spiritual life. We're all foolish in the material world. Even the most elevated person in this material world is a slave of lust. So Srila Prabhupada has brought out this point in the purport, and it's relevant to every reader, every person in this world. Even if someone is beyond lust and is simply absorbed in the bhav of Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Abdila Hari Kalola Magno Mohur. Even if someone happens to be on the level of the six Goswamis, which it's a very elevated level, isn't it? But they were engaged in Nana Shastra Vichara, in examining the Shastras for the sake of benefiting the world by giving instructions to people of the world through their teachings about how they could come to the level of prema bhakti, being adosha dhatata sadhu sangha atha bhajana kriya, this gradual process of elevation. So sometimes you might think, well, what Srila Prabhupada is teaching is very basic, and actually to a large extent that's true, because Prabhupada was the world acharya, and most of the people in the world are a long, long way away from Govardhan. And for that matter, it could be stated also that quite likely many of the people in Govardhan are also a long, long way away from Govardhan. It's not simply that by planting one's body in a place which you can look up on the map, Govardhan, a thana, a police station in UP, that one can actually come here. One who performs his eating, sleeping, mating and defending in Govardhan is not necessarily any closer to Govardhan than people who perform their eating, sleeping, mating and defending anywhere else. But most people in the world, or actually everyone in the world, we can say, there may be a few exceptions of very elevated people, but everyone in the world is bewildered by Cupid. Srila Prabhupada emphasized this point and what we might consider very basic points. He emphasized these points again and again in his Bhaktivedanta purports. And of course he also he also gave in his books what we could he gave the highest topics also. But we find in Srila Prabhupada's general ministration, there's another word for you. Do you know that? Ministration. It means he was a minister, just like a minister. So a minister ministrates. It means he's conducting his acharyaship, you could say, or his teaching, which is his, in his general, minute by minute, he was addressing the needs of the persons around him. Not his own needs. Srila Prabhupada repeatedly taught, we are not the body. We do not belong to this material world. Sex attraction binds us in this material world. And of course, he glorified Krishna unlimitedly, as he does in this purport. He glorified Krishna unlimitedly by preaching Bhagavad Gita all over the world. Now, we shouldn't think that. There may be a tendency to think, well, why was Prabhupada always, didn't he have anything higher? Of course, Srila Prabhupada is fully aware of all the teachings of the Goswamis. But he gave to us what we needed to hear. And he was quite cautious about this and condemned as his acharyas previous to him had done, his own guru and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this teaching, public teaching or giving to persons without proper adhika, eligibility, trying to teach people which about things which they're not ready to or fit to hear. Just like I was saying, if you go down to Radhakund, quite likely, I happened to come across a CD of lectures by a certain prominent resident of Radha Kund. So I listened to about 20 minutes of it, and he was speaking from Vilapa Kusumanjali, which is, if we want to, it's probably, it's difficult for a conditioned soul to say, but it appears to be the, what we might say, the most intimate and esoteric level of Krishna consciousness, a prayer. Yeah, vilapa. You all know what that word vilapa means? Like lamentation. So, calling, lamenting, to a prayer to Radharani, to be engaged in her intimate service. So, this lecture is being given, and anyone can come and listen. It's distributed widely, and but our previous acharyas have condemned us that the actual result of attempt, you may say, well, this person's on the highest level because they're distributing the highest thing, but that's not necessarily so. Isn't a person on the highest level one who understands the needs of others and administers to them accordingly? Isn't that actual compassion, rather than speaking high things to people who are actually, as can be known if one cares to pry into such matters, that among the Babajis it's not just something of the past, but illicit sexual connections, unfortunately, it's something that they are not, they're still prone to, and some fall into that. So these topics, of course, we're not saying they shouldn't be discussed, but they're to be discussed very carefully among persons of suitable eligibility. They can be very dangerous, because, just like we see, it's taught about here about the queens of Krishna, who are completely transcendental and pure. But it's stated that their glance, which is only directed at Krishna, which cannot perturb Krishna. Do you know what perturb means? You all know that word? Srila Prabhupada, you don't know what it means? It means something like disturb. Srila Prabhupada uses that word here. But that could disturb even Lord Shiva. What to speak of other great yogis. It's also stated in Bhagavatam 10th canto that when the queens of Krishna were playing in the water with Krishna and the Pandavas, that when playing in the water, then the wet cloth becomes stuck to their body, and persons who are not pure became disturbed by seeing that. Well, how you may think, well, how could you become disturbed by seeing the transcendental body of the queens? But it's stated like that because our vision isn't transcendental, because we have the tendency to enjoy this material world and to consider everything within it, everything in existence, something for my enjoyment. And even that extends to Krishna and his pure devotees. We take Krishna as being part of the paraphernalia of our sense enjoyment. Everything, Ishvaraham aham bhogi, I'm the controller, and everything in the world is meant for my enjoyment. So we extend that up to Krishna, and most of what goes on in the name of religion in the world is trying to make a pact with some, they generally prefer to leave him undefined, God, that I'll offer you this much incense and you give me a lot more back because you're more powerful than me, and it's a good business deal. I give you a little and you give me a lot. People fail to believe in God when he fails to fulfill their material desires. Or they worship God with the hope of achieving unlimited sense gratification in a future heaven, or whatever, in different languages. So, but that is not bhakti. Bhakti means anyabhilashita shunya, the first condition. Without being free of personal or desires for personal enjoyment, then the tendency to enjoy will extend up to Krishna, or in frustration that I can't enjoy at all, we think I can't enjoy and therefore I'll cease to exist. If I can't enjoy, alright, there's no enjoyment, alright, then I won't exist. But either way, both bhog and vairagya, the spirit of enjoyment and the spirit of bhog and tiag, and the spirit of renunciation, both are denying our position of service to Krishna. So simply to be a tyagi, in one sense it's more elevated than that of someone who's trying to enjoy the material world. At least he's seen that there is no material enjoyment in this world. But his response to seeing that there's no material enjoyment in this world is not to think, alright, let me serve Krishna. But if I can't become an enjoyer, I'm still not going to serve Krishna. Forget serving Krishna. And forget everything else too. The envy of Krishna is not expunged from his heart. Expunge. Okay, that's another one. I was just talking with Rem yesterday about obscure English words, so I thought I might explain. It's not that obscure, but for people who are not that much used to English. Expunge means to remove without any trace. Completely gone. As if it were never there. You say something is some statement is expunged from the records. So it's a good word actually for talking about material desires. They have to be removed totally. So what should we do? We have to hear about Krishna. That's the only way to become fully purified. To hear about Krishna. But we have to hear about Krishna in a manner that will help us to develop the spirit of selfless service to Krishna. Hearing about Krishna's intimate pastimes can be very dangerous for persons who are not completely free of the enjoying spirit, because it appears as it may appear that the intimate associates of Krishna, they are enjoyers of Krishna. Their relationship with Krishna is so intimate that everything they do is only for Krishna's enjoyment. But we find, for instance, that Radharani is envious of Chandravali. It appears like that. There's some sectarian rivalry. Why should Krishna go with Chandravali and not with me? So it appears that Or Krishna and the gopis are fighting and arguing, and the gopis are calling Krishna bad names. Now, unless we have a very clear understanding that this is all, what is the meaning of Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, then the tendency will be to think of Krishna as someone very ordinary, and to think that this is the trick of Maya. And to think that our own dealings and the dealings of Krishna are on the same level. That works in two contaminating ways. One way is to drag Krishna down to our platform in our imagination. And the other is to try and hike ourselves up to Krishna's platform in practical activities. For instance, getting some gopis and having a little Rasleela. And it happens in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. You may laugh, but there are people who attempt to justify that in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. There are men who dress as women and they can say, well, I'm practicing sadhana. You see, that I'll really feel like a gopi if I dress like a woman and imitate women in all respects. And it's an apparently plausible, well, it's a plausible case, you could say, but it's spurious. Now, plausible means apparently, it might seem like it's logical, but spurious means that it only seems like it's logical, but it's not. It's bogus. It's false, though it may appear to be correct. So, Srila Prabhupada has very kindly given his Bhaktivedanta purport to the world, which explain everything very clearly and repeatedly. You may think, oh, now in the ninth canto, and here Srila Prabhupada is saying, not the body. You know, I read that in the Bhagavad Gita and it's getting a bit too much, you know, having to read it again and again and again. You're not the body, and you know, give us a break, you know. Can we have something a little higher? I heard an anecdote shortly after I joined the movement, or I was allowed to flop in the door, that, and actually you can, that Srila Prabhupada, when he was staying in Bhaktivedanta Manor in England, he was repeatedly lecturing on, well, he was doing verse by verse each evening, Bhagavad Gita lecturing, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where there are many verses in which Krishna repeatedly states the same thing more or less in various ways, that the nature of the soul as being different from the body. And those lectures are still available. You can read the transcriptions and listen to the recordings. So a devotee told me, and this is one of those Prabhupada saids which is, I never heard it since, but anyway, it's a plausible, Prabhupada said, that a devotee had said, or a foolish disciple, had said to Srila Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, you keep on repeating that we're not the body, and could you lecture on something else, because now we've understood that. And Prabhupada said, you have not understood it. That's why I have to lecture on it again and again. So, actually we need this, to hear this. It may not be the only subject, we're not saying it's the only subject, but it is something that we need to hear, because it's very easy, as we have probably all experienced, that even after hearing about this and speaking about it many times, even the most basic subject, that we're not the body, it's very easy to identify with the body, isn't it? Especially when we get sick or cold. It's cold in Govardhan in the winter. It's very cold. So it's very easy to consider that. I mean, it certainly feels like it when you get up early in the morning, or you feel like, I don't want to get up, it's too cold. So it certainly feels like it's very cold. And that is me, I am experiencing. So we need to hear these topics repeatedly. Of course, you're all engaged in what we could call, and definitely are, higher studies. Studying, you're being trained to study the works of the Gaudiya Acharyas, which are the highest teachings of any teachings of anyone in the universe at any time in history. So you're being engaged in very high level studies, beginning with studying Sanskrit, which that's the key to enter, and these writings. Learning Sanskrit in itself can become for many a cause for pride, because not everyone has the brains to study Sanskrit. Of course, in Kali Yuga, we're all fools. And Otherwise, Sanskrit is the, among cultured people, Sanskrit is the language. So, as we're all mlechas, by, no, not all mlechas, but we're coming from that background, we're all Vaishnavas. But mlecha means, well, one meaning of mlecha is one who doesn't speak Sanskrit. So, as we all come from that kind of background, for those of you who are studying Sanskrit, I'm still very much mlecha. I don't know Sanskrit. So, you may think, well, now I'm really getting advanced. So, in one sense, maybe yes, but the real advancement is to understand that this is an opportunity to serve our acharyas. Different devotees are serving in different ways. And to remember the example of the acharyas who were all emblems of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching of being humbler than a blade of grass. We find, for instance, that Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was commissioned to write about the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which are the most intimate, in the later pastimes especially, the most intimate expressions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy were especially manifest in the later part of his pastimes. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, among all the great devotees who were present at the time, he was commissioned by the Vaishnavas to write Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that was confirmed directly by the Madan Mohan deity. And he was a great scholar, there's no doubt. Nowadays one might be considered a great scholar if one can study Chaitanya Charitamrita, but to write it was no small thing, with so many quotes from so many Shastras and so many, especially from the Bhagavatam. And in those days, there used to be a time in ISKCON also when there was no Veda base, so it wasn't just a matter of typing something, but you had to know where everything was. So many quotes from so many Shastras and such beautiful language, so beautifully expressed. But he himself has stated what is his qualification for writing that murka, you can understand, he is describing himself as murka, nicha, kudra, kshudra, which means, what does it mean? Look at it, insignificant. Murka, nicha, kudra, mui, vishaya, lalosh. What does that mean? Vishaya, lalasa. Please don't say what it means. You don't say I. But what does it mean? Vishaya means? Material sense enjoyment. And lalasa means having strong desire for. So it means he's describing himself as vishaya, lalas. But Vaishnavagga bale kare etek shahosh, but I'm bold enough to undertake this writing of Chaitanya Charitamrita because I've been thus ordered by the Vaishnavas, and I'm Vaishnavagya Bali by the strength of that order. So he never thought that, well, I'm something great, but he thought that this order has come to me, I should do it. It's by their strength that I am able to do this. So, yeah, in one sense, the service which you are embarking on, if you make it through to a level of competence to be able to follow in the footsteps of Gopi Puranadana Prabhu in translating these books, if you're able to do that, you should understand, you'll only be able to do that if you, not simply by linguistic ability, but if one can develop the devotional qualification of Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, who is blessed by Srila Prabhupada and the Goswamis to translate in this way. that then one may be able to do this, and that requires the utter humility, as Srila Prabhupada had the utter humility and dedication to speak on and on and on, day after day after day, what people needed to hear. Srila Prabhupada was ordered by his guru to preach in the Western world, so he spoke according to the need of people. He wrote according to that. Okay, I'll take this musical interlude as a sign that I'll finish this dissertation here, unless there's any question. I think I got the general point over. Yes, please. Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
A few times in the lecture, Maharaji said Gaudiya. I seem to remember that there's some explanation by Bhaktisiddhanta.
Gaudiya. What is the meaning of Gaudiya? Gaudiya means of Bengal. That's the exoteric meaning of the word Gaudiya. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said a Gaudiya is a devotee of Radharani. General term is Vaishnav, which means devotee of Vishnu. There's another term, Karshna, which isn't much used in this sense, but it means a devotee of Krishna. And Gaudiya means a devotee of Radharani. That was an explanation given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So there are many esoteric points, no doubt. Yes, please. This word Gaudiya is a very important word. Actually, it's not just some kind of label. You need to stick a label on something, on everything, to classify it, so we can fit it in our schema of understanding everything that's going on around us. It's not just a label. Put it in a box and it's understood what it is, but it's a very important term. I object to this term that the mundane scholars use, Chaitanya Vaishnavism or Chaitanya Vaishnava, because it's not a word used in the tradition. The term is Gaudiya Vaishnava. So why do they want to, why you say something else? What's their point? Why don't they use the term Gaudiya? Don't fall into the trap of the mundane scholars. Very, very dangerous. Very dangerous people. Because they know a lot, theoretically or externally, but they haven't entered into the spirit. So for them, it's just another box, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Throw it in a box, label it, write a PhD on it, and become an expert. Become an expert on Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Chaitanya Vaishnavism, right? Writing a PhD thesis on something about it, and contribute to the fund of human knowledge. It's a wrong approach. It doesn't attract the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So superficially they know a lot, but the more they know, the further they go away from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by offending him and his devotees at every moment, by daring to write about them without even once offering obeisances to them for a start. To think that they can enter into this without offering obeisances. It's an offense just to start off with, and then everything else you do on top of that is simply compounding the offense. Yeah, who is it? Yeah.
At the end of the monastery, you are preaching some verse in which you say that, well, listening to the description about Krishna's pastimes in the Gopi,
will depart from the heart. Yes, Shadhan Vitam.
So, what should be, since that
the
Krishna is there only for the unit,
then we should just listen to Rasa Lila and all the lust will go away from the heart. Well, Srila Prabhupada gave a very practical insight into this when, in one of his lectures, when he was discussing this verse, he said, if by hearing one feels that one's lust is increasing, then stop hearing, don't be foolish. So there's a very practical test. Apparently, I just recently heard this from the famous Bhavananda, that Srila Prabhupada had said that Brahmachari shouldn't read this section of Krishna book about the Rasa-lila. It's documented that when certain devotees in Los Angeles were concentrating on reading those sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita which describe the intimate feelings of Radharani and the gopis of Krishna, Prabhupada told them, don't read it. It's not for you. You're not ready for that. So that may seem like a very harsh prescription, but it's realistic. And we see practically there are devotees within or at the edges or outside of ISKCON who purport to purvey the highest teachings, and they've got something better than everyone else, but we find that persons who go to them, we don't find that they become any, just by going to a higher level guru, that they become free from even the most basic or the lowest material urges. We don't find that practically in their behavior that they become to that level of the highest Paramahamsas just by attempting to take a pole vault into the Rasa-lila. In other words, it doesn't work. The attempt to artificially go up to a level without going through all the stages, which begins with, for us practically, it begins with satisfying our guru. That's otherwise, how are we going to have any chance of controlling our mind and senses? Everything will come into time. But even, you see, one may be on the highest level, but it's not a matter for public advertising. Hello everybody, I'm a gopi. Just want to let you know. Srila Prabhupada is very cautious in these matters. He didn't reveal what he didn't state what his Manjari Swarup, or some might say his Gopa Balak Swarup was. He didn't reveal that to anyone that we know of. So he's very cautious about these matters, and it would be wise for us, considering that it is to Srila Prabhupada that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the mercy to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. He's the world acharya, so it would be wise for us to consider the ramifications of that. Srila Prabhupada is very cautious. What was it? Is he cheating us? No, I'm gonna give you Krishna consciousness, but no Vraja Leela, I'm gonna cheat you and ha 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 ha. Is that what Prabhupada was doing? No. He wanted to give us the highest thing. That's why he gave us. The parents may want the child to be a doctor or an engineer. Mostly in India, they want their children to be doctors or engineers. So what do? They send their kid to the kindergarten and gradually bring them along. That's a mundane analogy. Because then afterwards everyone can see they're a doctor or an engineer. But the point is, yeah, you all have to go to your classes. So I'll finish that. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna. So please stick with it. You're all, those of you who are in the school, it's a very important project for the glorification of our acharyas, that their glories be known, and that devotees of ISKCON represent the acharyas to the world. They're already doing that by doing Harinam all over the world and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, but this aspect is also required. It's all for the same purpose. Everything we're doing is for the glory, meant for the glorification of the acharyas. So some people have some specialized services to do, so please stick with it. And the key is acharyopasanam. We're here not to elevate our false egos, but to proclaim the glories of the world, to the world, of the Vaishnava acharyas. Hare Krishna. Question. What is the question?
The question is that, actually I was curious and I went once to Vrindavan Sumandali.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to know what it's all about. Now the experience I got, and based on that experience there will be a question. The experience I got after reading a lot, because I'm Vishnu, not a big book, it's like 107 verses or something.
Yeah.
115. Is that after reading it, I was really inspired to do just menial service, like on my level even.
Good.
And that was the impression after reading the Love of Sumanjali. So the question based on this is, some of Goswami and other acharyas' literature are kind of not, are said not to be, you know, publicly discussed or, you know, like openly read or something. But if one feels genuine inspiration for Dasya, let's say, that's cool. Is it allowable for one to read some of those books, which are not directly, you can say...
Well, the thing is that we'll find in many of these books that it's right there in the text, and it may just be a short thing, but it's some statements which are, from our perspective, or even from Krishna's perspective, quite erotic. Which is, it seems, that reason. I mean, it may seem like sex literature. So, you have to be careful about that. And all of a sudden there's something... I mean, you've read it also. Things like Krishna loosens the clothes of the gopis. And it can... It may be in among so many other things, but then it can agitate the mind of someone who's not completely pure. And therefore... I feel we should follow Prabhupada's example of being very cautious about this, about such. Now, I was talking about discussing such things publicly. I didn't say we shouldn't discuss them privately. That may be among persons of suitable eligibility. The point is that persons should be of suitable eligibility, and it should be discussed according to our level of eligibility also. And also,
like,
only to discuss that as if we're not bothered with we're not bothered with Bhagavad Gita or the first or anything else. Only these discussions of Gopi Leela. But like I was saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself discussed about Dwarka Leela. He would hear repeatedly about Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. So, like I was saying, better not to try to be a better Gauriya than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we find that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's writings in translation have become very popular in ISKCON. But we find also that he gave a lot of very deep philosophical purports, which means that he himself was educated in those things and in those matters, and he didn't reject them as being extrinsic to Krishna consciousness. He was fully grounded in those matters, and he took the trouble to write on these matters. So again, we shouldn't try to be a better Gauriya than Vishwanatha Chakravarti.
Like for one's personal study of Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, is it that can this approach be taken as just using one's intelligence, being cautious?
One should be guided by the guru and stick to that. stick to what is told. There's a faith that I'm not being cheated. Spiritual life isn't a do-it-yourself endeavor. Teach yourself Gaudiya Vaishnavism in 30 days.
So then it's most safe then to ask permission if one has a desire to read something else than what is directly given.
One should be very well grounded in Prabhupada's books, very deeply grounded. Try to understand Prabhupada's whole mission and his approach. Srila Prabhupada's approach was for the benefit of the whole world. He wanted these teachings distributed in a way that would be for the benefit of the whole world. Which, moving among the mass of people and devotees, mostly devotees need guidance in very, what we could call very basic matters, isn't it? I mean, what about yourself? You know, you're talking about reading very high things. What about keeping a room clean? Let's begin at the beginning. Krishna consciousness is not just a mental construct. They're practical activities. So yeah, all those things are there. But again, one can't take, it's no use to try to take a pole vault in there. And one should, feelings can be indicative and they can be dangerous also. We should be very careful of being led by our feelings only. The approach of the acharyas is to guide us philosophically. Feelings can be very misleading. So very carefully we should tread. And understand that, yeah, even we may go to such matters, but we are serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this particular phase of the Krishna consciousness movement spreading all over the world, and there's so much work to be done at the very basic level, helping people get established in Krishna consciousness and overcoming that. The day-to-day misconceptions and blockages. Prabhupada himself is the example. He could have just stayed in Vrindavan and relished topics of higher, what we could call higher topics. He was certainly most eminently qualified to do so. He went all over the world and tirelessly spoke, you know, the body, control the senses. Why we have to accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So if we do that, we'll suddenly have Prabhupada's mercy. We may get... it's quite likely that the city, the hellish cities and towns of Kali Yuga are better places for getting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy than Radhakund. So work now, samadhi later. Prabhupada also said that. It's a life of sacrifice. That's a life of service. Otherwise you find the Babaji's, they're just imitating. They're having their feasts and where are the Babaji's? They're not living like Raghunath Das. They have a feast every day and rich people come and sponsor it. I was told last night that this Ananta Das Babaji has 2 crores in a personal bank account. I heard somebody, no, you were there. Of course. So it's quite likely because it's so much. Even this whole thing about being a Mahant, none of the Goswamis, they weren't Mahants. They all accepted very. If you really want, they want to follow Rupa Goswami by wearing a dress like him and discussing all these high topics and this and that. Then why are they having bank accounts? And why do they have any organization at all? If they really want to follow exactly, why then there shouldn't be any Mahants. Why do they have such a term at all? So practically you can't live like Rupa Goswami, like they lived. Why aren't they eating just, if they want to follow exactly like that, then they should just take a few drops of buttermilk every other day. So go forward, but carefully. You're regularly taking guidance from Dhanadhar Maharaj. You can continue to do that.
Actually, this experience of reading Vilapa Samaj, it was years ago. Now, when I'm living in Govardhan, I see how Dharma Maharaj, Keshava Bharti Maharaj, Vaisheshika Prabhu, Jayadvaita Maharaj regularly gather every Kartik and they discuss Bhagavad Gita. And I was kind of fortunate to be present in those discussions. And I felt so humbled because I felt how. I was rediscovering Gita for myself, and it was so exciting, actually. To tell frankly, that the last few years, I feel like reading Gita, because I understand how much meaning was closed for me before, and now by some association, I'm getting some glimpse into the depths of just Gita, which is considered ABC, which is not such an easy thing.
No.
And it's full of so many subtleties and so damn practical, like.
Yeah, because they're all practical creatures in the world.
And the Gita itself, like, it's so practical, relevant, like. So I kind of recently I felt so much actually tasteful. You know, going deeper into basic shastras which Prabhupada gave. Just I wanted to check, you know, regarding that thing, for example, Vilapa Samajali. Just wanted to kind of know what you think about it based on like before.
All right. This topic and so many important points which we have to understand, assimilate and propagate to our own members of ISKCON also. Just like we were hearing last night, the people that in search of the highest thing, they go from ISKCON to Narayan Maharaj to the Radha Kund Babaji's and then they don't get there. Just imaginary. They'll be at home in Italy or wherever, working in some job, coming home, watching TV.
Just recently, Dhanadhar Maharaj, when he was writing his article on Bhaktisiddhanta and Radha Maharaj, he went several times over to Radhakund to meet a person called Madhavananda, who was ex-ISKCON disciple,
then he went to the Babaji.
And he was like kind of a looking very serious, kind of a really into shlokas, memorizing all these dhyanas and so on. So Maharaj kind of thought, you know, he wanted to extract some points of their philosophy from him, which was very useful for his research. Now, recently I came to know that after being such a so-called serious person who kind of claimed to Maharaj that he has a lobha for aspiring for those high things. He went somewhere, he couldn't stay at Radhakund. He went somewhere to Nepal, joined as a member of some, kind of a charitable trust. Then some girls came by and then he fell down. Now he's just like a karmi now. It was just a couple of years, like even 1.5 years back, he was still at Radha Kund, thinking that he has lobha. Now he's completely fallen, like, sex life. And so kind of another example. Another and another. Unfortunately, one devotee from our school was also there. Kind of.
Who's that?
Disciple of Bhaktivaibhav Maharaj, Navakishore. A senior devotee in ISKCON from Kazakhstan. Somehow he had some, you know, he says
they haven't fully developed their service attitude, the attitude of I should go higher. I deserve more than I'm getting. I'm not being given the real thing. That feeling is there.
And what I saw and what I heard from Dhanadhar Maharaj is that actually even if people want to go higher, there are in ISKCON there are devotees who go very deeply into bhajan and they don't give up Prabhupada. So one actually can get guidance without leaving Prabhupada. It's true, but the point is that kind of they prefer to kind of leave Prabhupada for.
In general, our movement at this phase is not meant for everyone going deep, you know, spending hours and days and their whole life in bhajan. It's a lot of work to do in the field. Prabhupada told Burijan people that you preach and then at the age of 50 he said, go and live in Vrindavan. And he is living in Vrindavan and he's serving the preaching mission in Vrindavan. So, yeah, establishing farm communities and like this. Obviously, farm communities means some devotees, when they're older, maybe they'll be less, they may withdraw more into what we might call the inner life. But you may find it on a street corner in New York. You may find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy more than you'll find it in Radhakund. You can be there, but not be there. You know, it's by invitation only.
However, it's still
you might be given your invitation on the street corner in New York, passing out Prabhupada's books.
It still seems important that even though, like, and I think the relevance of preaching mood will be always there, all the times. But still seems very, very relevant and very necessary for devotees to maybe have sometimes some retreats where they could kind of really try to actually relish Krishna consciousness, to get the personal experiences so that they could preach with more realization of it.
It's
like, also seems very.
Yeah, sure. You have to take time to study and chant and interact with devotees. But that goes on also every day. We have a morning program. An evening program is supposed to be there if we don't have preaching. So, actually we do.